possibly lose. I wasn't getting it away from him.
Why do you have to be the toughest, the bravest? Why can't you just once let me do something for you? Going down in the hole doesn't scare me. Let me do this for you, please.
His voice was still soft, and he was leaning into me enough so that I could smell the drying blood on him, the richness of fresh blood in his mouth, as if some small cut had not healed completely. I shook my head. I have to do it, Richard.
Why?
And his voice held the first hint of anger, like a slap of warmth. Because it scares me, and I have to know if I can.
Can what?
If I can crawl down into that hole.
Why? Why do you need to know that? You've proven to me and everyone here that you're tough. You don't have anything left to prove to us.
To me, Richard. I have something left to prove to me.
What difference would it make if you couldn't climb down in that stinking hole? You'll never have to do it again, Anita. Just don't do it.
I looked at him, at the puzzlement in his face, his eyes, which had bled back to their normal, perfect brown. I'd been trying to explain shit like this to Richard for a few years now. I finally realized that he would never understand, and I was tired of trying to explain myself, not just to Richard, to everybody. Give me the flashlight, Richard. He held on with both hands.
Why do you have to do this? Just tell me that. You're so scared your mouth is dry. I can taste it on your breath.
And I can taste fresh blood on yours, but I have to do it because it scares me. He shook his head.
This isn't courage, Anita. This is stubbornness.
I shrugged. Maybe, but I still have to do it. He clutched the flashlight tighter.
Why?
And somehow I thought the question was about more than the oubliette and why I had to climb inside it. I sighed. Less and less scares me, Richard. So when I find something that does bother me, I have to test it. I have to see if I can do it.
Why?
He studied my face like he'd memorize it. Just to see if I can.
Why?
And the anger was more than a faint hint now. I shook my head. I'm not competing with you, Richard, or anyone else. I don't give a shit who's better or faster or braver.
Then why do it?
The only person I compete against is me, Richard, and I'll think less of me if I let you or anyone else climb down in that hole first. Gregory is my boy, not yours, and I have to rescue him.
You've already rescued him, Anita. It doesn't matter who climbs in the damn hole.
I almost smiled, but not like it was funny. Give me the flashlight, please, Richard. I can't explain this to you.
Does your Nimir Raj understand it?
The anger burned along my skin like a swarm of stings. It damn near hurt. I frowned at him. Ask him yourself. Now give me the damn flashlight. If you get angry at me, it never takes me long to respond.
I want to be your Ulfric, Anita. Your guy, whatever the hell that means. Why won't you let me be?
He stopped talking, looking away from me. The man. Was that what you were going to say? He looked back at me and nodded. Look, if we keep dating or whatever the hell we're going to do, we have to get one thing straight. Your ego is no longer my problem. Don't be the man for me, Richard. Be the person I need. You don't have to be bigger and braver than I am to be my man. I've got male friends that spend most of their time trying to prove they have bigger, brassier balls than I do. I don't need that from you.
What if I need to be braver than you for myself, not for you?
I thought about that for a second or two, then said, You're not afraid of going down into the oubliette, are you?
I don't want to go down, and I don't want to see what they've done to Gregory, but I'm not as afraid as you are, no.
Then it doesn't make you braver than me to go down into the hole, does it? Because it doesn't cost you anything to go down there. He leaned very, very close to my ear, then breathed the barest of sounds against my skin.
Like it would cost you nothing to kill Jacob for me.
I stiffened beside him, then turned, trying to keep the shock off my face.
I knew that was what you were thinking the moment I saw you look at him,
Richard said. You'd let me do that? I asked, voice soft, but not as soft as his had been.
I don't know yet. But wouldn't your reasoning be that it would cost you nothing to do it, and it would cost me dear?
We stared at each other. I finally nodded. He smiled.
Then let me go down the fucking hole.
When did you start using the F word?
While you were away. I think I missed hearing it.
He grinned at me suddenly, a bright flash of smile in the dark. I could not smile back. Kneeling by that horrible black opening, fear still flat on my tongue, his anger still riding the air between us, and we smiled at each other. I'll let you go down the hole first, I said. The smile widened until it filled his eyes, and even by starlight I could see them gleam with humor.
Okay.
I leaned into him and gave him a quick kiss. Too quick for the powers to move between us. Too quick to taste the blood in his mouth. Too quick to find out if our beasts would roil through each other's bodies. I kissed him just because I wanted to. Because for the first time I thought we might both be willing to bend a little. Would it be enough? Who the hell knew? But I was hopeful. For the first time in a long time, I was truly hopeful. Without hope, love dies and parts of you wither. I didn't know what it meant for Micah that I had hope for Richard and me. We'd talked openly about sharing, but I didn't know how much of that had been for public show and how much had been real. But right that second, I didn't care. I clutched that positive emotion to me and held on. Later, we'd worry about other things. I'd let Richard climb down first, but I'd still be going down, and I wanted that small, warm hope inside my chest, along with the fear. 27. Richard's weight on the rope ladder kept it tight under my hands. He'd put his flashlight on a strap around his wrist. I watched the pool of yellow light vanishing down into that narrow darkness and realized that I was still barely on the ladder, my head still above ground. Micah was kneeling beside the hole.
It'll be all right, he said.
I swallowed and looked at him, knowing my eyes were just a little wide.
I know,
but my voice came out breathy.
You really don't have to do this,
he said, voice soft and as neutral as he could make it. I frowned at him. Don't you start.
Then you better catch up with him.
His voice was a little less neutral, but I couldn't tell what tone it held. I started climbing down the soft roughness of the rope ladder, moving quickly, angrily. I wasn't angry with Micah, not really. I was angry with me. The anger got me well down into the dark where the light from the flashlight below me seemed very yellow and very stark against the earthen walls. I clung there for a second or two, staring at that hard-packed earth. I gazed up slowly and found Micah staring down at me from a distance so far away that I couldn't tell what color his eyes or hair were. I knew it was him from the shape of his face and shoulders. My God, how deep did this pit go? It seemed like the earthen walls were curving in towards me, like a hand about to close into a fist and crush me, so that I couldn't breathe enough of the stale, flat air to fill my lungs. I closed my eyes and forced myself to move one hand off the ladder and touch the wall. It was farther away than I'd thought, and when I finally touched it, it startled me. The earth was surprisingly cool against my hand, and I realized it was cool in the pit, even with early summer heat up above. I opened my eyes and the walls were still about 6 feet circular, just like they'd always been. The earth wasn't closing in around me. Only my phobia was doing that. I started climbing down again, and this time I didn't stop until I felt the ladder loosen under my body, and it was suddenly harder to climb down without bumping into the dirt walls. Richard's weight was no longer steadying the ladder for me. If I hadn't been such a pain in the ass, I might have asked for him to hold it steady until I got down to the end. Instead, I hugged the ladder frantically and kept moving downward. It's hard to cling to something while you're climbing down it, but I managed. The world narrowed down to the feel of the rope under my hands, my feet trying to find purchase, just the simple act of moving downward. It got to the point that I stopped jumping every time my body bumped the walls. Hands touched my waist, and I let out that little yip that is only a girl sound. I always hated when I did it. They were Richard's hands around my waist, of course. He steadied me the last few feet while my heart tried to jump out of my chest. I stepped down onto a floor that crunched and rolled with bones. They were deep, yet you didn't sink into them. Rather walked on top of them like a saint treading on water. The narrow shaft opened into a small, cramped, cave-like hole in the earth. Richard had to stand bent almost in two. I could stand up if I was careful, though the top of my hair brushed the ceiling solidly enough that ducking a little was a good idea. Micah called from way, way above us.
"Are you all right?"
It took me two tries to be able to say, "Fine. We're fine." Micah pulled back from the opening, a dark dot against the paler grayness. "My God, how far down are we?"
60 feet, give or take.
There was something in his voice that made me turn to him. He shook his head and looked to one side, shining the flashlight on something small and hunched. It was Gregory. He was on his stomach, hog-tied, his arms and legs at such acute angles that I couldn't imagine lying there like that for 3 days. He was nude, a white cloth blindfold cutting across his face, knotted in a tangle of long blonde hair, as if even that had been done to hurt, and not merely to blind. As Richard's light played over Gregory's body, he made small, helpless sounds. He could see the light through the cloth, if nothing else. I knelt beside him, seeing where the silver chains had dug into his wrists and ankles. The wounds were raw and bloody where he'd struggled against them.
"The chains have rubbed him raw," Richard said, voice soft.
"He struggled," I said.
"No, he's not powerful enough to take this much silver against his skin. The chains ate their way into his skin."
I stared at the raw wounds and didn't know what to say. I touched Gregory's shoulder, and he screamed through the gag I hadn't seen. His hair had hidden it, but there was a dark rag stuffed in his mouth. He screamed again and tried to worm away from me. "Gregory? Gregory, it's Anita." I touched him as gently as I could, and he screamed once more. I looked up at Richard. "He doesn't seem to hear me." Richard knelt and raised a tangle of Gregory's hair. Gregory struggled harder, and Richard handed me the flashlight so he could use one hand to steady the smaller man's face, and the other to keep the hair out of the way. There was more cloth stuffed in his ears. Richard pulled out the cloth and found a black earplug deeper in the channel. They were never meant to be pushed in that far, and when Richard pulled it free, fresh blood trickled from his ear. I just stared, my mind frozen for a second, not wanting to understand. But finally, I heard myself say it. "They burst his eardrums. Why, for God's sake? Wasn't the blindfold and gag enough sensory deprivation?" Richard held the earplug up to the light. I had to shine the flashlight directly on it to see that it had a metal point. "What is that?"
"Silver," he said.
"Oh, God. They were designed for this?"
"Remember, Marcus was a doctor. He knew all kinds of medical supply places. Places that would make things."
The look on Richard's face told me he was lost in memory, and something darker. I glanced back at the marks on Gregory's arms and legs. "Dear God, did the silver tear up his ear canals the way it did his skin?"
"I don't know. It's good that it's still bleeding. It means if he shapeshifts soon, he'll probably heal."
Richard's voice was thick. I wasn't close to crying, the horror too overwhelming for tears. "I wanted Jacob down here, and whoever had helped him, because you didn't do this to a shapeshifter without help. Not one-on-one." Richard tried to take off the blindfold, but it was tied so tight he couldn't get a good hold on it. I handed him the flashlight and drew the knife from my left wrist sheath. "Hold him. The knives are sharp. I don't want to cut him if he struggles." Richard held Gregory's head between his two hands like a vice, and Gregory struggled harder, screaming through the gag. But Richard held him firm while I slid the knife carefully between the cloth and Gregory's hair. One quick slice downward, and the blindfold eased away from his skin. But it had been tied so tight for so long that Richard had to peel it away. Gregory blinked at the light and saw Richard and screamed more. Something died on Richard's face when he did it, like it had killed something inside him to have anyone be that terrified of him. I leaned over, placing my hand carefully on the pile of bones and watched Gregory's eyes finally see me. He stopped screaming, but he didn't look relieved enough. I pulled the gag out of his mouth and it peeled away, taking bits of lip skin with it. He worked his mouth slowly, and for some odd reason I was reminded of the scene from The Wizard of Oz where Dorothy puts oil on the Tin Man's jaw after he'd been rusted. The image should have made me smile, but it didn't. There was a padlock on the chains around each of his limbs. Richard crawled around me, letting me stay where Gregory could see me. I was saying over and over again, "It's going to be all right. It's going to be all right." He couldn't hear me, but it was the best I knew how to do. Richard snapped the lock on one wrist, and pain showed on Gregory's face like it hurt for the arm to move at all. Richard freed both wrists and then began to slowly uncurl Gregory's body. Gregory screamed, but not from fear this time, from pain. I tried to cradle him, but moving at all seemed to hurt. It took both of us crawling around to get him unbent enough to lay in my lap. He was never going to be able to climb the ladder. The bends of both of his arms were covered in needle marks. None of them had healed. The needle marks? Why haven't they healed?
Silver needles in direct contact with the bloodstream. A sedative to keep the adrenaline low so you can't change, but not so much that you can't feel or know where you are and what's happening. That's how Raina used to do it.
This is how she used to tie them up, and exactly what she used to do to them. How did Jacob know that? I asked.
One of my people told him,
Richard said. He stayed on his knees rather than stand bent over. His face was calm, almost serene. I want them down here. Whoever helped Jacob, whoever brought out those damn earplugs, I want them down here. He turned those calm eyes to me, and I saw the anger at the bottom of that calm.
Could you do this to someone? Could you plunge these things in their ears? Could you do all this to anyone?
I thought about that, really thought about it. I was angry. Sickened. I wanted to punish someone, but no. No, I could shoot them, kill them, but I couldn't do this.
Neither could I, he said.
You knew Gregory was in the oubliette, but you didn't know what they'd done to him, did you? He shook his head, kneeling on the bones, still staring down at the bloody earplug, like it held answers to questions too hard to ask out loud.
Jacob knew.
You're Ulfric, Richard. You should know what's done in your pack's name. The anger flared so hot and tight that it filled the little cave like water just this side of boiling. Gregory whimpered and watched Richard with fearful eyes.
I know, Anita. I know.
So you're not going to put Jacob down here?
I am, but not like this. He can stay down here, but not chained, not tortured.
Richard glanced around the tiny space.
Being down here at all is torture enough.
I didn't even try to argue that one. What about whoever helped him? Richard looked at me.
I'll find out who helped him.
Then what? He closed his eyes, and it wasn't until he opened his hand and I saw the flash of blood that I realized he'd pressed the silver point into his palm. He pulled it out and stared at the bright flash of blood.
You just keep pushing, don't you, Anita?
The pack knows you well enough, Richard. They know you didn't mean for anyone to be put down here, especially not with all Raina's old accoutrements. Doing this at all was a challenge to your authority.
I know that.
I don't want to fight, Richard, but you have to punish them for this. If you don't, then you lose more ground to Jacob. Even if you put him down here, it won't stop things. Everyone that touched this has to suffer.
You're not angry now,
he said, and he looked puzzled.
I thought you wanted revenge, but you seem cold about it all now.
I wanted revenge, but you're right. I couldn't do this to anyone, and I can't order done what I wouldn't do myself. Just a rule I've got. But the pack is a mess, and if you want to stop the downward slide and keep them from a civil war, werewolf against werewolf, you must be harsh. You must make it clear that it is not acceptable.
It isn't,
he said. There's only one way for them to know that, Richard.
Punishment,
he said, and he made the word sound like a curse. Yes, I said.
I've worked for months, no, years, to try and get away from a punitive system. You want me to throw away all that I've worked for and go back to the way it was.
Gregory's hand came up slowly, painfully, to clutch weakly at my arm. I stroked his matted hair, and his voice came out hoarse, abused, as if even through the gag he'd been screaming for days.
I want out of here, please.
I nodded my head so he could see it, and a relief so large it was beyond words flashed through his eyes. I looked up at Richard. If your system worked better than the old one, then I'd support it, but it's not working. I'm sorry that it's not working, Richard, but it's not. If you continue this experiment in democracy and gentler, kinder laws, people are going to die. Not just you, but Sylvie and Jamil and Shangda and every wolf that supports you. But it's worse than that, Richard. I watched the pack. They're divided almost evenly. It will be civil war, and they will tear each other to bits, Jacob's followers and the ones who won't follow him. Hundreds will die, and the Thronos Roki clan may die with it. Look at the throne you're sitting on as Ulfric. It's ancient. You can feel it. Don't let everything that it stands for be destroyed. He stared down at the still bleeding wound in his hand.
Let's get Gregory out of here.
You'll punish Jacob, but not the others, I said, and my voice was tired.
I'll find out who they are first, then we'll see.
I shook my head. I love you, Richard.
I hear a but coming.
But I value the people who count on me for their safety more than I value that love. It felt cold and awful saying it out loud, but it was true.
What does that say about your love?
He asked. Don't go all sanctimonious on me, Richard. You dropped me like yesterday's news when the pack voted me out. You could have said, screw it, take the throne, I want Anita more, but you didn't.
You really think Jacob would have let me walk away?
I don't know, but you didn't make the offer. It didn't even occur to you to make the offer, did it? He looked away, then back, and his eyes held such sadness that I wanted to take it back, but I couldn't. It was time we talked. It was like the old joke about the elephant in the living room. No one acknowledged it existed until the shit was so deep they couldn't walk. Glancing down at Gregory, I knew the shit was too deep to ignore. We were out of options except for the truth, no matter how brutal.
If I'd stepped down as Ulfric, even if Jacob had let me do it, it would still have been civil war. He'd have still executed those closest to me. It would have been deserting them. I'd rather die than just walk away and leave them to be slaughtered.
If that's how you really feel, Richard, then I've got a better plan. Make an example of Jacob and his followers.
It's not that simple, Anita. Jacob's got enough support that it might still be war.
Not if it's bloody enough.
What are you saying?
Make them fear you, Richard. Make them fear you. Machiavelli said it nearly 600 years ago, but it's still true. Every ruler should strive for his people to love him. But if they cannot love you, then make them fear you. Love is better, but fear will do the job. He swallowed hard, and there was something close to fear in his eyes.
I think I could kill Jacob, and even execute one or two of his people. But you don't think that's enough, do you?
Depends on how you execute them.
What are you asking me to do, Anita?
I sighed and stroked Gregory's cheek. I'm asking you to do what needs doing, Richard. If you want to hold this pack together and save hundreds of lives, then I'm telling you how you can do it with the minimum amount of bloodshed.
I can kill Jacob, but I can't do what you're asking. I can't do something so terrible that the entire pack would fear me.
He looked at me, and there was a wildness, a panic in his face, like a trapped thing that finally realizes there is no escape. I could feel my face grow calm, and I felt myself sinking into that place where there is nothing but white noise and the solid, almost comforting surety that I felt nothing. I said softly, "I can." He turned away from me as if I hadn't spoken and called up for them to lower the harness. We slid the harness around Gregory, talking only about the task at hand, no metaphysics, no politics. There was a second harness on the rope, and Richard made me put it on. I'd get to cradle Gregory, protecting him with my body so he didn't get scraped up too badly. "I've never done this before," I said.
"I'm too broad through the shoulders to add Gregory's bulk to mine. It has to be you. Besides, you'll keep him safe. I know you will."
There was something in his eyes that made me want to say something, but he jerked on the rope, and we started rising into the air. Richard watched us, face upturned, his flashlight casting odd shadows around the small room as he knelt on the bones. Then we were up inside the tunnel and I couldn't see him anymore. I had my arms full, literally and figuratively, trying to keep Gregory from crashing into the walls. His arms and legs were still almost useless. I wasn't sure if it was because of the long confinement or the drugs he'd been given, or both. Probably both. Gregory kept saying, "Thank you, thank you, thank you," under his breath. By the time we reached the top, there were tears drying on my cheeks. Regardless of what Richard decided, someone was going to pay. Jacob was there, already bound in silver chains, carried like a piece of struggling luggage between three werewolves. They let him keep his cut-off shorts. No nudity for the good guys. I guess there has to be some differences, or how do you tell which side you're on? Cherry was already checking Gregory over. She had to keep chasing the other leopards back. They kept trying to touch him. I stared across the clearing at Jacob. The look in his eyes was enough. Richard could be squeamish if he wanted to be, but if I let what had been done to Gregory stand unchallenged, then Jacob and his followers would see it as weakness. They'd turn and destroy us once Jacob secured his power base. Because there was one way for Jacob to avoid a civil war, and that was by doing what I was encouraging Richard to do. If he did something so terrible that the others were afraid to fight, then he could be Ulfric without a bloodbath. I'd seen what he'd done to Gregory. Call it a hunch, but I was willing to bet Jacob would do what needed doing. He didn't strike me as the squeamish sort. Richard climbed out of the hole.
"Put him in."
"Do you want the drugs used?" Sylvie asked.
Richard nodded.
"What about the blindfold and the rest?"
Richard shook his head.
"Not necessary."
Jacob started struggling again.
"You can't do this!"
Richard knelt in front of him, holding him by his thick hair. The grip looked painful.
"Who showed you where these were?"
He held his hand out with the silver-tipped earplugs in his palm.
"Oh my God,"
Sylvie whispered.
Others asked, "What is it?"
"Who, Jacob? Who told you our dirty little secrets?"
Jacob just stared at him.
"I could have them used on you,"
Richard said. Jacob paled a little, but he didn't answer. His jaw was so tense that I could see the muscles pulsing, but he didn't give up who'd helped him. He didn't even ask if answering the question would save him from the oubliette. I had to admire that, at least, but I didn't have to like it.
"You wouldn't do that."
It was Paris, looking a lot less confident than she had by the throne. She looked downright unsure of herself in her skin-tight dress. Richard looked at her for a long time, or maybe it just seemed long, and something in his eyes made her look away.
"You're right. I can't use them on Jacob or anyone."
He looked around the clearing at the scattered wolves and at the ones waiting in the trees beyond.
"But hear me. If there are any more of these things around, I want them destroyed. When Jacob comes out of the oubliette, it is to be sealed up forever. You have learned nothing from me, if any of you could do this. You have learned nothing."
He signaled Sylvie, and she came forward with a syringe. The three werewolves had to hold Jacob against the ground for her to give him the shot. They held him until his limbs went limp, and his eyes fluttered shut.
He'll wake up in the oubliette,
Richard said. His voice held not just tiredness, but defeat. He turned to me as they carried Jacob towards the hole.
Take your leopards and your allies, and go home, Anita.
I'm Lupa, remember? You can't kick me out of pack business. He smiled, but it left his eyes empty and tired.
You're still Lupa, but for tonight you're also Nimir Ra, and your leopards need you. Take care of Gregory, and for what it's worth, I'm sorry about all of this.
Sorry is worth something, Richard, but it doesn't change things.
It never does,
he said. I couldn't read his mood. He wasn't sad exactly, or worried, or anything I had a name for except defeated. It was like he'd already lost the battle. What are you going to do? I asked.
I'm going to find out who helped Jacob do this.
How? I asked. He smiled and shook his head.
Go home, Anita.
I stood and looked at him for a heartbeat or two, then turned back to my leopards. Gregory was on a stretcher, and Zane and Noah were carrying it. Cherry was talking to the werewolf doctor that had packed Jacob's nose. She was doing a lot of nodding. Instructions, maybe. Micah was standing at the edge of the group, watching me. I met his eyes, but neither of us smiled. I looked back, but Richard was already moving off through the trees with Jamil and Shang-Da at his back. Micah's face was very neutral as I walked towards him. I wasn't hopeful anymore. I could have played it cool, but I didn't want to. I was tired, so terribly tired. My clothes smelled like an outhouse, and probably so did my skin. I wanted a shower, clean clothes, and to make the lost look in Gregory's eyes go away. The shower and clothes were the easy part. I didn't even know how to begin to make Gregory's pain go away. I held out my hand to Micah, not because of otherworldly energy, apparently depression dampens that, but because I wanted the touch of another hand. I wanted the comfort, and I didn't want to have to think about it. I just wanted to be held. He widened his eyes, but took my hand, squeezing it gently. I started walking towards the trees, leading him by the hand. The others followed us, even the Swan King and the were-rats. Anita Blake, preternatural Pied Piper. The thought should have made me smile, but it didn't. 28. 2 hours later, I'd had a shower, and Gregory had had a bath, though I'd showered by myself, and Gregory had had company. He still didn't have complete use of his arms and legs. I didn't think that Cherry, Zane, and Nathaniel needed to get naked and in the tub with him, but hey, I wasn't offering to help, so who was I to complain? Besides, it never became sexual. It was as if the touch of their flesh on his was necessary, part of the healing process. Maybe it was. I was sitting at my new kitchen table. My old two-seater table just hadn't been roomy enough for all the were-leopards to have bagels and cream cheese at the same time. The new table was pale pine, varnished to a golden glow. There still wasn't enough room at the table for everyone to sit and drink coffee, but it was closer. I'd have needed a banquet table to have that much room, and the kitchen wasn't long enough for it. There was more than one reason that feudal lords had had great big castles. You needed the room just to feed and care for all your people. The only person sitting in the dimly lit kitchen was Dr. Lillian. Elizabeth had been transported to the secret hospital that the shapeshifters kept in St. Louis. All my other leopards were tending to Gregory. Micah and his cats wandered around the periphery of it all. Caleb had tried to include himself in the bath and had been refused. The rest of Micah's pard seemed unsettled, nervous, not knowing what to do with themselves. I had my priority for the evening, taking care of Gregory. Everything else could wait. One disaster at a time, or you lose your way and your mind. Dr. Lillian was a small woman with gray hair cut straight just above her shoulders. Her hair was longer than the first time I met her, but everything else was the same. I'd never seen her wear makeup, and her face still looked pleasant and attractive in a 50-plus sort of way, though I'd discovered she was actually well over 60. She certainly didn't look it.
The drugs are still in his system, Dr. Lillian said.
Drugs, plural? I asked. She nodded.
Our metabolism is so fast that it takes quite a cocktail of chemicals to keep us sedated for any length of time.
Gregory wasn't sedated. He seemed very much aware of everything that was happening, I said.
But his heart, his breathing, his involuntary reflexes were all subdued. If you can't access the full effect of an adrenaline rush, you can't change shape.
Why not? Lillian shrugged, taking a small sip of her coffee.
We don't know, but there is something in the extremes of the fight-or-flight response that opens the way for our beast. If you can deprive a shapeshifter of that response, then you can keep them from shifting.
Indefinitely? I asked.
No, the full moon will bring it on, no matter what drugs you pump into someone.
How long until Gregory's back to normal? Her eyes flicked downward, then up, and I didn't like that she'd needed that second to school her eyes, as if something bad were coming.
The drugs will probably wear off in about 8 hours, maybe more, maybe less. It depends on so many things.
So he stays here until the drugs wear off, then he shapeshifts and he's fine, right? I put a lilt at the end, making it a question, because I knew the atmosphere was too serious for it to be that easy.
I'm afraid not, she said.
What's wrong, Doc? Why so solemn? She gave a small smile.
In 8 hours, the damage to Gregory's ears may be permanent.
I blinked at her. You mean he'll stay deaf?
Yes.
That's not acceptable, I said. Her smile widened.
You say that as if by sheer will you can change things, Anita. It makes you seem very young.
Are you telling me that there's nothing we can do to heal him?
No, I'm not saying that.
Please, Doc, just tell me.
If you were truly Nimir-Ra, then you might be able to call his beast out of his flesh and force the change, even with the drugs in his system.
If someone can tell me how to do it, I'm willing to give it a shot.
So you believe that you will be Nimir-Ra in truth, come full moon?
Lillian asked. I shrugged and sipped my coffee. Not 100% sure, no, but the evidence is sort of mounting up.
How do you feel about that?
Being Nimir-Ra for real? I asked. She nodded. I'm trying really hard not to think too much about it.
Ignoring it won't make it go away, Anita.
I know that, but worrying about it won't change things either.
Very practical of you if you can pull it off.
What, not worrying? She nodded again. I shrugged.
I'll worry about each disaster as it happens. Can you really compartmentalize to that degree?
How do we fix Gregory?
I take that as a yes, she said.
I smiled. Yes.
As I said, if you were a Nimir-Ra in full power, you might be able to call his beast even through the drugs.
But since I haven't shifted yet, I can't?
I doubt it. It's a rather specialized skill, even among full shapeshifters.
Can Raphael do it? She smiled, the smile that most of the were-rats got when you asked about their king. It was a smile that held warmth and pride. They liked and respected him. Let's hear it for good leadership.
No.
That surprised me, and it must have shown on my face.
I told you it is a rare talent. Your Ulfric can do it.
I looked at her. You mean Richard?
Do you have another Ulfric?
She asked, smiling. I almost smiled back. No, but we need someone who can call leopards, right? She nodded. How about Micah?
I've already asked him. Neither he nor Merle can call another's beast. Micah did offer to try and heal Gregory by calling flesh, but the injuries are beyond him.
When did Micah try and heal Gregory?
While you were cleaning up, she said.
I took a quick shower.
It didn't take long for him to be certain that Gregory's injuries were above his abilities.
You wouldn't be belaboring the point if there wasn't some hope.
I can use other drugs to try and overcome the effects.
But, I said.
But the mix of the drugs could explode his heart, or rupture enough blood vessels in other major organs to kill him.
I stared at her for a heartbeat or two. How bad are the odds?
Bad enough that I need his Nimir-Ra's permission before trying.
Has Gregory given his permission?
He's terrified. He wants to be able to hear again. Of course he wants me to try, but I'm not sure he's thinking clearly.
So you're coming to me like you'd go to a parent for a child, I said.
I need someone who is thinking clearly to make a decision on Gregory's behalf.
He has a brother. I frowned, because I realized I hadn't seen Stephen at the Lupinar. Where is Stephen?
I've been told that the Ulfric ordered Gregory's brother not to attend tonight. Something about it being unfair for him to watch his own brother be executed. Vivian has gone to get him.
My, that was big of Richard.
You sound bitter.
Do I? And that sounded bitter even to me. I sighed. I'm just frustrated, Lillian. Richard is going to get people I care about slaughtered, not to mention himself.
Which risks both you and the master of the city.
I frowned at her. I guess everyone does know that part.
I think so, she said.
Yeah, he's risking us all for his high moral ideals.
Ideals are worth sacrifice, Anita.
Maybe, but I'm not 100% sure I've ever held an ideal close enough to trade the people I love for it. Ideals can die, but they don't breathe. They don't bleed. They don't cry.
So you would trade all your ideals for the people you care about? She asked.
I'm not sure I have any ideals anymore.
You're still Christian, aren't you?
My religion isn't an ideal. Ideals are abstract things that you can't touch or see. My religion isn't abstract. It's very abstract, very real.
You can't see God, she said. You can't hold him in your hand.
How many angels can dance on the head of a pin, huh? She smiled.
Something like that.
I've held a cross while it flared so bright it blinded me until all the world was just white fire. I've seen a copy of the Talmud go up in flames in a vampire's hands, and even after the book had burned to ash, the vampire kept burning until it died. I've stood in the presence of a demon and recited holy script, and the demon could not touch me. I shook my head. Religion isn't an abstract thing, Dr. Lillian. It is a living, breathing, growing, organic thing.
Organic sounds more Wiccan than Christian, she said.
I shrugged. I've been studying with a psychic and some of her Wiccan friends for about a year. Hard not to soak some of it up.
Doesn't studying Wicca put you in an awkward position?
You mean because I'm a monotheist? She nodded. I have God-given abilities and not enough training to control those abilities. Most denominations of the church frown on psychics, let alone someone who raises the dead. I need training, so I've found people to train me. The fact that they're not Christian, I see as a failing of the church, not a failing of theirs.
There are Christian witches, she said.
I've met some of them. They all seem to be zealots, as if they have to be more Christian than anyone else to prove that they're good enough to be Christian at all. I don't like zealots.
Neither do I, she said.
We looked at each other in the darkened kitchen. She raised her coffee mug. I'd given her the one with a tiny knight and a large dragon that said, "No guts, no glory." Lillian said,
"Down with zealots."
I raised my own mug in the air. It was the baby penguin mug, still a favorite. "Down with zealots." We drank. She set her mug on the coaster and said,
"Do I have your permission to try the drugs on Gregory?"
I took a deep breath and let it out slowly, then nodded. "If he agrees, do it." She pushed back from the table and stood.
"I'll get everything ready."
I nodded, but stayed sitting. I was praying when I felt someone come into the room. Without opening my eyes, I knew it was Micah. He waited until I raised my head, opened my eyes.
"I didn't mean to interrupt," he said.
"I'm finished," I said. He nodded and gave that smile of his that was part amusement, part sorrow, and part something else.
"You were praying?"
He made it a question.
"Yes."
Some trick of the light made his eyes gleam in the dark, like there was a spark of hidden fire down deep in their green-gold depths. The illusion lost his eyes and most of his face to shadow and darkness. Only that shimmering gleam remained, as if the color dancing in his eyes was more real than the rest of him. Without seeing his face, I knew he was upset. I could feel it like a tension down my spine. "What's wrong?" I asked.
I can't remember the last time I prayed.
I shrugged. A lot of people don't pray.
Why does it surprise me that you do?
He asked. I shrugged again. He took a step forward, and the light fell upon his face and that odd, mixed smile of his.
I have to go.
What's wrong? I asked.
What makes you think anything's wrong?
Tension level between you and your cats. What's up, Micah? He pressed his thumb and forefinger against his eyes, rubbing as if he were tired. He blinked those jewel-like eyes at me.
A part emergency. We've got one member that couldn't come tonight, and she's got herself in trouble.
What kind of trouble?
Violet is our version of your Nathaniel, the least dominant of us.
He left it at that, as if it explained everything. It did, and it didn't. And? I said.
And I have to go help her.
I don't like secrets, Micah. He sighed, running his fingers through his hair. He ripped the ponytail holder out, threw it on the floor, ran his hands through the shoulder-length curls over and over, as if he'd been wanting to do it all night. The movement was harsh, frantic with tension. He looked down at me, dark brown hair in disarray around his face, eyes gleaming. In an instant, he went from being this nice, attractive man to something feral and alien. It wasn't just the hair or the kitty cat eyes. His beast bubbled against my skin like boiling water. I'd felt his power, but not like this, almost hot enough to scald. Then I realized that I could see that heat. See it. It flowed over him, invisible but almost not, like something half seen out of the corner of your eye. I could almost see the shape of something monstrous looming around him, like heat rising off of summer pavement, a rippling thing. I'd been around shapeshifters for years and never seen anything like it. Merle appeared in the doorway.
Nimiraj, is anything wrong?
Micah turned, and I got a swimming afterimage, as if something large and almost invisible moved around and just above his body. His voice came out low and growling.
Wrong? What could possibly be wrong?
Gina pushed past Merle.
We've got to go, Micah.
Micah put his hands up, and the afterimage moved with him. I couldn't actually see claws and fur, just hints of it, swimming around him. He covered his eyes with his hands, and I saw those ghostly claws go through, into, past his face. Watching it made me dizzy, and I looked down at the tabletop to steady myself and reality. I'd heard Marianne say she could see auras of power around people and lycanthropes, but I'd never been able to see one before. I felt his power folding away, the heat, the skin-ruffling sensation pulling away, like the ocean going back from the shore. I raised my face to see, and that seen-not-seen shape was gone, swallowed back into his body. He stared down at me.
You look like you've seen a ghost.
You're closer than you think, I said.
She's afraid of your power, Gina said, and there was scorn in her voice.
I looked up at her. I saw his aura. Saw it like a white phantom around his body.
You say that like you've never seen it before,
Micah said. I haven't. Not a visual. Gina took his arm gently but firmly and tried pulling him towards the door. He just looked at her, and I felt his presence, his personality, for lack of a better word, like something almost touchable. She dropped to the floor, gripping his hand, rubbing her cheek against it.
I meant no offense, Micah.
The look on his face was cold. His power, his force, began to trickle through the room again.
Nimiraj,
Merle said.
If you are going, then you must go. If you are not going...
His voice was careful, almost gentle, a pitying tone of voice, and I didn't understand why. Micah growled, at Merle, I think. Then his voice came out normal, human.
I know my duty as Nimiraj, Merle. I would never presume to tell you the duties of a Nimiraj, Micah,
he said. Micah suddenly looked tired again, all that energy draining away. He helped Gina to her feet, though it looked awkward since she was more than a head taller.
Let's go.
They all turned towards the door. I hope your leopard is all right, I said. Micah glanced back.
Would Nathaniel be if he'd called for help?
I shook my head. No. He nodded and turned back for the door.
Mine either.
He hesitated and said without turning around,
I'll take Noah and Gina with me, but if it's all right, I'll leave Merle and Caleb here.
Won't you need them with you? He looked back, smiling.
I just need to pick up Violet. I don't need muscle for that, and you might want some extra muscle.
You mean in case Jacob's people get pesky? His smile widened.
Pesky, yeah. In case they get pesky.
Then they were gone into the other room, and I was left alone at the table. Lillian came back in, her eyes narrowed. What? I asked. She just shook her head.
None of my business.
That's right, I said.
But if it were...
But it's not, I said. She smiled.
But if it were, I'd say two things.
You're going to say them anyway, aren't you?
Yes, she said.
I waved her to go ahead.
First, it's nice to see you letting yourself follow your heart with someone new. Second, you don't know this man very well. Be careful who you give your heart to, Anita.
I haven't given anyone my heart yet.
Not yet, she said.
I frowned at her. You do realize that you've told me to follow my heart and not to follow my heart. She nodded. Those are contradictory bits of advice, I said.
I'm aware of that.
Then which piece of advice do you want me to follow?
Both, of course.
I shook my head. Let's go save Gregory and worry about my ever-sordid love life later.
I can't promise that we'll save Gregory, Anita.
I held up a hand. I remember the odds, Doc. I followed her out and into the darkened living room and tried to believe, really believe, in miracles. 29. We decided to do it on the deck out back. My deck backed to a couple of acres of mature woodland. No neighbors. No one to see us. The deck was also twice the size of the kitchen, which was the only part of the house without carpeting. Once a shapeshifter changed on carpet, it was either steam clean it yourself or hire it done. I was not the one who suggested that Gregory would ruin the carpet. It was actually Nathaniel. He was, after all, the person most likely to be vacuuming between housekeeper visits. I wasn't even sure I knew where the vacuum was. Gregory was curled in the center of the deck, his head in his brother's lap, his arms wrapped around the other man's naked waist. Only the curling yellow hair, paled by moonlight, covered Stephen's upper body. He'd stripped to the waist in preparation for the change. He was going to go out into the woods with his brother. This presupposed that Gregory would survive the change. We had a 50-50 chance, not bad odds if all you were about to lose was money, but when it was someone's life, 50-50 just didn't sound that good. Stephen looked up at me. His cornflower blue eyes were silvered with moonlight. He looked pale and ethereal. His face was raw with emotion. His eyes held an intelligence and a demand that Stephen didn't often show. He was submissive, fragile in every walk of his life, but in that moment he laid a demand on me with his eyes, his face, the pain that showed in the set of his shoulders, the fierce way he touched his brother, who was still huddled in his lap, just a fall of long, pale curls and paler skin. Gregory was naked in the hot summer night, and until that moment I hadn't noticed. The nudity didn't make me think of sex. It made me think how terribly vulnerable he was. Stephen looked up at me and asked with every line of his body, the desperation in his eyes, what he was too submissive to say out loud. I didn't need to be telepathic to know what he wanted. Save him. Save my brother, he screamed at me from his eyes. To say it out loud would have been redundant. Vivian, who was as fragile as Stephen, as submissive, said it out loud anyway.
Please, try and call his beast. At least try before they use the drugs.
I looked at her, and there must have been something in my face that frightened her, because she dropped to her knees and crawled towards me. It wasn't that graceful stalk that the leopards could do. It was like a human crawling, awkward, slow, head down, eyes rolled up. She was displaying the leopard version of submissive behavior, and I hated it. Hated her feeling the need, like I was some ogre that needed placating. But I let her do it. Richard had shown me what happened in a were group when the dominant refused to be dominant. She leaned against my legs, pushing her body against me, head down. Normally, leopards would roll around my legs like huge cats, but tonight Vivian just pressed against my legs, more like a frightened dog than a luxuriating cat. I leaned over to touch her hair and heard her murmuring under her breath, so soft, "Please, please, please." You would have had to be colder than even I was to ignore that soft pleading. "It's okay, Vivian. I'll try." Rubbing her cheek along my jeans as she raised her head, her eyes rolled up to me, again like a frightened dog. Vivian had always been timid around me, but I'd never seen this level of fear before. I didn't think it was Gregory's torture that had made the difference. I think it was the fact that I'd shot Elizabeth full of holes. Yeah, that probably did it. And I couldn't undermine the lesson by reassuring Vivian now that I wouldn't shoot her. Merle and Caleb were listening, and if we were really going to combine our pards, being feared was not a bad way for me to start. I looked across the deck and found Merle watching me. He was still fully dressed, jeans, boots, jean jacket over bare chest, the scar showing like a flash of moonlit lightning across his stomach. We stared at each other, and the force in his gaze, the physical potential that shimmered around him, made the hair on the back of my neck crawl. I'd spent years around dangerous men and dangerous monsters. Merle was both. If I could make him truly afraid of me, that would be a good thing. Caleb, on the other hand, had started stripping off his clothes when everyone else did, and only my protest, backed by Merle, had kept his pants on. He walked barefoot, moonlight catching in the rings in his nipple and the edge of his belly button. He had to look directly at me for the ring in his eyebrow to spark. He was circling Cherry, who had never dressed after helping Gregory in his bath. She stood tall and comfortably nude, ignoring him. The fact that he was paying attention to her nudity was a breach of protocol among the shapeshifters. You only noticed nudity if you'd been invited to have sex. Short of that, you pretended everyone was as neuter as a Barbie doll. Zane stepped between Cherry and the circling Caleb, giving a low growl. Caleb laughed and backed off. I did not need another pain in the ass in my pard, and that's what Caleb was. Dr. Lillian was standing behind us holding a huge needle all ready to go. The two were-rat bodyguards, Claudia and Igor, were behind her. They'd surprised me by putting on guns in the car on the way over. Guns weren't allowed in the Lupinar, but they were bodyguards, and guns were a good thing for bodyguards. Claudia had a 10mm Beretta tucked behind her back. The fact that she could carry a 10mm anything said how much larger her hands were than mine. Igor had a shoulder rig with a Glock 9mm. They were both good guns, and the two were-rats handled them like they knew what they were doing. Raphael had insisted that they stay just in case Jacob, or his allies, got some wild idea about a preemptive strike. Claudia and Igor stood in typical bodyguard pose, hands clasped in front of them, one hand holding the opposite wrist. It's usually a guy thing to stand like that, or a jock thing, but bodyguards do it too. It's like they hold their own hands for reassurance. Their faces were neutral. They were here to protect me, not Gregory. Didn't matter to them, or didn't seem to. Nathaniel leaned against the railing, wearing a pair of shorts, his hair hanging like a dark curtain around his body, still wet from the bath. It took forever for his hair to dry naturally. His face was serene. It reflected an almost zen-like pleasantness, as if he trusted me to make everything all right. Of all their faces, his was the most unnerving. I was used to people being afraid of me eventually, but soft adoration? That I was not used to. I looked back down at Vivian, still pressed against my legs. There was fear in her eyes, but there was also hope. I touched her face and managed to smile. I'll do what I can. She smiled, and it was radiant. She was always beautiful, but when she smiled like that, there was a little girl peeking out, someone more joyous and more free than the Vivian I knew. I valued that little girl smile